Welcome back, folks. I had an occasion to read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of weeks ago, and it's entitled "The Bay Area is Getting Old Fast, and It Will Change Everything." And as I read through the article, it occurred to me that a lot of what was being pointed out there, that we had very similar experiences here. And my curiosity grew as to where do we find ourselves at the present time. And what's going on there is really interesting. A lot of these communities in the greater San Francisco area are getting old really fast. In less than 10 years, numbers changing really almost in a seismic way. And what they've recognized is that there are increasing burdens on Social Security, classrooms, schools having to close, a labor pool that's not really very deep, a lot of universities struggling with enrollment. And what's also interesting is we oftentimes turn to immigration as it relates to being a solution to this problem, but fertility rates are down in Mexico and China, two major sources of migrants that go to the Bay Area. Somewhat very similar in a lot of other jurisdictions. It's not unique to San Francisco. We're seeing this across this country and around the world as well. So I thought it'd be an interesting conversation to have with Greg Rigamer, a demographer and political consultant. I've known Greg for a long, long time, and he has his finger on the pulse of a lot of this, and he joins us. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate the invitation.
So, Greg, I think you had the opportunity.
We've known each other for a long time.
So, Greg, I assume you got an opportunity to read this article. Your thoughts, and let's just start there.
Yeah, I did, and I appreciate forwarding the article to me. It's really what's happening in San Francisco is extreme in a sense, but it's happening throughout the entire United States, and particularly in our area. We're right up there with San Francisco relative to the accelerating aging of our population. There are a couple of things that figure into this. First of all, as you mentioned, declining fertility rates. The replacement level for population is 2.1 children for women of childbearing age. Well, last year, we're at 1.599. So we're not generating, we're not having the replacement population, so to speak. People are living older because of better health care and the like, and it's just creating an imbalance in population. Now, another factor that comes into play is the livability of a community, okay? And, you know, you and I have had this conversation many times, and I'm always on a soapbox about it, but you can't have prosperity without growth, period. And when we look at communities like, you know, other Sunbelt communities and look at their economy and look at ours, look at the average earnings and so forth, we really lag behind. And so it's not only an economic matter, it's a social matter, because we lose our younger class to places like Houston, Austin, it's Knoxville, you know? And when we start looking at, okay, so what's the average age? How does it change? Well, New Orleans, in the year 2000, the median age in the metropolitan area was about 34.2 years. It's 40 now. Very significant shift, okay? When we look at Louisiana, 34 in 2000, 37 now. So, you know, it's when we compare that to a place like Texas, where you have Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, and Houston and the like, Texas was 32 median age in 2000 and 35.9, right under 37 now, you know. Another significant factor in all of this is what percentage of our population is over 65. And I think this kind of reflects what we're talking about relative to economic viability, economy that attracts younger people and the like. So Jefferson Parish, 19% of its population is over 65. That's a huge number, okay? The New Orleans metropolitan area is over 18, about 18.3. Nashville, 14.2% over 65. Houston, 12.3. So, you know, you have a lot of factors that, that come into play here. And, you know, like everything else, it's all integrated. It's the tout ensemble, you know. But the bottom line is we're healthier, we're living longer, we're not having as many babies, and younger people leaving areas that are sluggish economically for a better life in other areas where they can earn more money and live in a younger community. And that's what's happening.
I have to imagine that this is intrinsically linked to the challenges that we have relative to out-migration versus in-migration. What's leaving
Absolutely.
And what we're replacing that with. If you would, talk about that for a moment.
Well, I noticed the other day, and I don't know if this is Wall Street Journal aware, but you know, you all's annual report about one-way truck rentals. And, you know, we're right up there at the top relative to people renting trucks to get out of Louisiana to go to some of these other major economic centers, you know, on that. You know, at the end of the day, it's challenging to make a living wherever you are. But some places it's even more difficult than others. And I think that's what we see here, you know. You know, we're just not a growing community. And when we look at the changes, you know, how we have changed over time compared to places like Nashville, like Houston, boy, that's just the world of difference. And, I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners are in situation like, you know, you have four well-educated children. Gee whiz, all of them live elsewhere. Now, at least two of mine have come back, you know, but for the most part, we invest a lot in education and preparing children for professions or the workforce, but they can't find satisfying jobs here.
Yeah, so we're going to, I'll take a break at this point, but when we come back, Greg, how do we reverse the trend? I mean, you know, it's cliche, but, you know, I said this election this year for mayor, I think, is really a defining moment coming off the 8 years of the LaToya Cantrell administration, where I think in a number of factors that you get judged by, we've actually kind of slid backwards and we didn't gain ground. We did in some areas, thankfully. But, you know, if we don't change this, especially without migration and the fact that we are an aging population here, how stagnant does our economy become and what are the challenges there? So we'll talk about that when we return. We're visiting with Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant. Stay with us, folks. According to U.S. Census Bureau data, households with children under 18 in the year 2000 in Orleans, 30%. In the year 2023, only 20%. In Jefferson, it was 33% in 2000, and in 2023, 23%. In the U.S., it was 33% in 2000 and 26% in 2023. Orleans is running 6% behind the national average of the United States. We're visiting with Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant. So, Greg, this presents a very interesting challenge, I think. And I said that, you know, this mayor's race is a defining moment for this city. I think you would agree. What can you do to turn the tide, to reverse the trend?
Well, the first thing you have to do is establish effective, credible leadership. You know, you can't make the economy bloom overnight. You can't reverse aging trends. But if you give people confidence, they have a reason to believe and maybe a reason to invest. And to your point, you know, we've got a lot of challenges. And, I mean, look at the amount of time we're spending on the garbage contract in the French Quarter. I mean, you think that happens in Nashville or in Houston? You know, no. and it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Friday, how two service providers, both, by the way, charging the public, move forward. And I mean, I just want to just give you a couple of perspectives. You know, I love numbers, and that's the plight of having me on here. But in we, from 2000 to 2024, the New Orleans SMSA is 18.7% smaller. We've lost population. During this time, Houston is up 39.5%. They have grown by, they've changed by over 3 million people. Nashville is 35.8%, okay, over 2000. So you say, okay, we had Katrina, but we were losing population before that. But let's say, okay, let's just talk about from 2020, the current period, you know. We have lost 41,000 people, down 4% in our metropolitan area, okay? Meanwhile, Houston is up 8%. They have grown by 646,000 people since 2000. Think about that. Nashville's up 136,000, 6%. So just think of the investment that it takes in building houses, apartments, grocery stores, and everything to accommodate an influx of 650,000 people over a four-year period. Think about that. In contrast, we lose 41,000 people. So you can see, relative to the economic implications there, that the growing economy needs people, needs investment to continue the churn. So we have to get the leadership, no question.
And I'm curious, because what goes along with that, you know, you and I worked together when before I was sheriff and while I was sheriff. And I always viewed my job as really trying to remove hurdles, getting from point A to point B with the least amount of bumps and restrictions. I find here we're actually putting up higher hurdles for folks. I mean, most recently, just to get a liquor license renewed and the notices that go out, we're a tourism-related economy, and liquor, whether we like it or not, is a big sector of our economy. And we don't make it easy to get your license renewed. I mean, it's like, or the notifications. I mean, it's like, oh wait, that's a burden that you got to bear. We're not there. Well, wait a minute. I thought this is a partnership. We should be in this together, right? I mean, because if you don't succeed, we don't win. Right?
It's in the community's interest for every business to be successful. Now, is that going to happen? No, of course it's not. No. But that should be our objective. You want to make sure that anybody who's out there offering service, offering employment, they succeed and that they grow so that we can attract more people here. You know, it really does begin with leadership, Noom. And you and I have had this discussion over many different topics. But the fact of the matter is, the leader points the way. The leader is the one who generates confidence in the community. So, yeah, I would agree. I think the municipal elections that are coming up in the fall are very important for New Orleans and very important for our region.
Yeah, I mean, we really have to create momentum, right? I mean, isn't that what it's truly about? And that credible leadership, developing that momentum, removing these barriers, becoming more efficient. I don't know that we have. I mean, I think over the last 4 years, in many respects, we're less efficient than we were before.
Well, look at how many times we're in the national news since the first of the year, you know, and not in good ways.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I had an interesting conversation with Melanie Talia yesterday from the New Orleans Police and Justice Foundation about the Teneo report. I mean, everybody went to the mic and said, we got to change, you know, the French Quarter is the jewel, you know, and everything else. And so I asked for a kind of a state of a state in the implementation of some of the recommendations at Teneo. And she says, there are none. I said, what?
I mean, there you go.
I mean, it was a shocking revelation, right? And then you add to that this battle over the garbage contract in the French Quarter. The French Quarter residents, the business owners, who are not on the same sheet of music a lot. Well, you know, they are, but they're not. But they're on the same sheet of music as to who they desire to be the trash contractor. And yet we're running in a different direction. It's like...
I agree with you. You know, we just complicate things, you know? It's as though you want to have a voice at any cost, not a positive voice, not a voice that really gets things done, but just the loudest voice, you know? And like I said, I can't imagine any of these successful communities that we've been speaking about enthralled in something as mindless as this garbage situation.
It's kind of interesting and how this all plays out. When we look at, in fact, it's funny. I don't know. Somebody's thinking along the lines that I am. So someone says, it just sends one word, gentrification. There are a lot of people that associate a negative connotation to that word. But isn't that just one form and one aspect of economic development in a region? And why should
Absolutely.
We fight that? You know, I mean, in this city really stymied its growth because we were about wealth preservation as opposed to wealth creation. And I think that's why Houston is where they are, because they're excited about creating and generating wealth. We kind of look upon it negatively, and I don't know why we fell prey to that. But, you know, when you look at the Porges Corridor, it wasn't financed by local banks. It was like banks from all over the rest of the country. You know, and it's like we weren't even interested in investing in ourselves.
And when's the last time we've built a major building in that in our primary business corridor? You know,
right.
The late 80s. You know? I mean, you're right. I mean, we our leadership should have the mindset, what is the most important thing I can do to help the business community grow? And, you know, I know we often hear the term culture bearers and all this, and that's very important to our community, but we absolutely have to have investment in economic development. No question.
And you know, with that come the industries and the opportunities of the younger folks, you know, moving into this area. I mean, we already have challenges that most folks don't, right? Like
right.
homeowners insurance through the roof, automobile insurance that's, you know, crazy. And we don't have to move far. I mean, you know, you go 30 miles from the middle of the city, and auto rates drop and homeowners rates drop. And, you know, significantly in some cases. You move across the state line to Mississippi and, you know, you're just as close to water as others. And you look at the rate and you say, well, I don't understand. It's 75% cheaper over here than it is, you know, over there. What's going on?
Yep. So that's what I'm saying. You know, it'd be great if you could flip a switch and change all of this, but you can't. But you can flip a switch with leadership. And that's what the community will have the opportunity to do in October, you know, on this.
Where do we see, let's put your political consultant hat on for a moment. voter apathy. I mean, it's been huge down here. I mean, the numbers have been just shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And I open up almost every show now reminding people, this is your opportunity. Assess the quality of the candidates that are out there. Right now, they're going to forums. Listen very carefully to what they're saying, you know, and whether or not you think they have the wherewithal to improve the quality of life here in the place that you call home. Is there any optimism is that voters are getting more in tune in this race as opposed to what's happened in the most recent past?
Well, speaking of that, since we have a full slate of municipal races coming up in October, let me just give you something that just always floors me. In Orleans Parish, where we have about 265,000 voters and the like, in a presidential race, 180,000 people will cast ballots in Orleans Parish, okay? In a mayor's race, it's like 85,000. And you can go back 2010, 2014, 2017. Now, in 21, it was only 77,000, but then again, the mayor didn't really have a very strong field of competitors for the reelection. Qualifying is in July. Ida hits in August, but the field is set by that time. Okay, she would have had more challenges probably after the way we responded to Ida. But you're right. There's tremendous voter apathy at the local level. You know, when you think about turnout for a presidential race, and of course, presidential preference is very important, no question. But better than twice when you're talking about the mayor, the sheriff, your council. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, so, you know, you do have a group of people who are engaged, but it's not the community as a whole.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I always ascribe to Tip O'Neill's statement. What was it? All politics are local.
It's local.
And if you're gonna change the course of your lifestyle, your community, your the quality of your life, it's the president's not going to do that.
No, it's
your local leaders that are going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about garbage collection a moment ago. this is where. This is what defines your community. You know, how well is your community managed? How attractive is it to investors? And I mean, when I say investors, not necessarily investors from far and away, but people who are willing to invest in their own community. I mean, if you're not willing to vote in something like a mayor's race, gee whiz, what does that say?
Do you see this race stimulating any interest? I mean, do you anticipate 80,000 votes being cast again this time?
As we've had this conversation multiple times, behavior is highly predictable. And what we see is when you look at people who their voting patterns, they typically vote in the same types of races all the time, you know? So I don't think you'll see anywhere near a presidential turnout. I don't think that's even remotely possible. We might see 90 to 100,000 votes. One of the things that was pretty interesting, you know, constitutional amendments usually don't draw a lot of voters out of the woodwork. You know, it's particularly if it's not on the ballot with other major elections. But in March, when we had the four constitutional amendments, some 82,000 votes were cast in Orleans Parish. And that's really phenomenal. That was a very high turnout. Now, of course, you had a lot of the religious community that mobilized against some aspects of, you know, the constitutional amendments, and the battle cry, vote no to all of them, proved to be very effective. But, you know, so in March, you had 82,000 people show up for that. But then in 21, voting for mayor, you only had 77,000 people. showing up to vote for mayor and city council. You know? So
what do you get? What sense do you have as to what's actually driving the voter apathy in New Orleans?
Things don't get any better. I hear that all the time. As you know, I do lots of surveys, and Ron Fauché just released one publicly. I don't release one publicly because they're typically for a candidate, you know, so there's a bit of confidentiality. But generally speaking, over two-thirds of the people surveyed say things are worse than they were 4 years ago. And so you get this sense that what difference does it make who we put up there? You know, we're in a continual state of decline or something like that. So that's part of voter apathy. A lot of, you know, we have a very stratified community, you know, and some people really enjoy living here and have the means to live well, and other people are struggling to get by. Might love the culture and everything else, but it's hard. And when things don't improve, people aren't optimistic. And when people aren't optimistic, they're not engaged. I mean, just think about that.
Are there many metro areas though that are hugely different? I mean, are generally, you know, when I look at the economic strata and data of a number of these communities, they always kind of resemble haves and have-nots, right?
Correct. But when
there's not a big, strong representation in the middle. And I'm just curious because in a lot of these jurisdictions, you don't have the amount of apathy that we have here.
Right. Well, once again, you know, when you have significant growth, there has to be a huge economic response to accommodate that growth. So it creates more opportunity in the community. Okay? That's why growth is so important, you know, because it gives a broader number of people a greater opportunity. When you don't have growth.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's just saying when you don't have growth, you're lucky if you can maintain the status quo. And that's what we're seeing, is that we're losing population. You're not even maintaining the status quo.
It's kind of interesting because I got the sense that this mayor, LaToya Cantrell, kind of put herself at odds with the business community early onset in her first term of office. And I don't know that her administration ever recovered from that, right? I mean, it had folks that were bringing forward a number of proposals, things to do, wanted to achieve success, but there wasn't a strong appetite to satisfy any of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree, because things haven't improved. You know, we continue to lose population. You've got to figure out how to make things work. And, you know, the age-old thing, you know, just management 101, what's your biggest problem? Let's fix it. Okay? Once we fix that, we'll move on to the next one. You know?
What's interesting to me, and I'm sure you've looked at this, if you took the positive, and I know this is going to sound crazy when I say it, but if you take away the positive economic impact of Katrina, BP, and COVID, where would we be? I mean, because we've really, a lot of the success that we've achieved is as a result of being a disaster economy.
Well, as you know, I was very much involved post-Katrina and also post-BP trying to help sort things out and try to justify the funding that came through the Road Home and through other programs, and also BP's response. Yes, there has been no comparable level of investment, you know, in the community. And like I said, in the year 2000, we had a population of, in Orleans Parish, population of about 485,000. By the time Katrina hit in 2005, that had shrunk to like 435,000, 450,000. We were losing population then. In the mid-60s, we were 650,000.
Yeah.
So when you think about a shrinking economy, what opportunity does that provide? You couple that with an educational system that has been challenged, you know, and you look at what technology has brought to us, the ability to compete with anybody, anywhere, anytime. So, you know, you don't really need to have proximity to anything in particular. You just have to be skilled and intelligent. And you know, we have had challenges with that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I'm convinced more than ever that this upcoming election is so very important here, and it could really set the course of where we're going to be 25 years from today.
Absolutely. And,
I mean, this is that friction between, you know, unpleasant truths and comforting lies. I talk about this all the time. You know. Right.
Well,
I mean,
because
if we're, you know, I mean, we a lot of times we're just not honest about the conversations that we're having, and it drives me crazy. You know, yeah, there are a lot of positive things that have happened, but it's not enough. I mean, there are a lot of other things that have to happen as well. As always, totally enjoy the conversation. Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant. Thank you so much for joining us today, Greg. And stay cool.
Thank you, Neil.
Have a great week.
As well.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. Give us a shout, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Chuck's up. What say you, Chuck?
Well, no, I know I've heard you say many times about the billions that came in with BP and COVID and Katrina, and that it's all sitting out there waiting for it to be put into the pipeline or something like that. And I
well,
agree.
We're
I
still spending Katrina money, Chuck.
And then that was in 2005.
Yes. Yes.
Right, but I mean, there was plenty of BP money too, and there was tons of COVID
absolutely.
Money. I'll tell you this, you know. I've seen a lot of the COVID money that came in that was supposed to be to keep your employees hired. Well, a lot of times the employees never went away. And you know who kept the money? The owners. They didn't give this to their employees. They didn't distribute this money. So what I think people see, what's going on, Newell, is they see this corruption, this greed, this not wanting to lift the masses up, not wanting to make the weakest link stronger. And that's what's eroding our city.
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, as it relates to opportunity, and that's why I wanted to have Greg on to talk about this. We get these opportunities and we seem to squander it, you know. So as you just pointed out, all this disaster money that we had come in here, that's the ability to leverage and really spread it, spend it judiciously, in a smart way, in a strategic way, and we seem to squander this. And I always
think it's
about
everybody's
what
in it for themselves. They just want to get what they can get. They don't care about the greater good.
No, they don't. They really don't.
And I don't know who they is, honestly. But
no,
whoever
I mean,
those people are, they just don't care. It's just
with Trump
right now. And I know I don't want to really get into Trump. I don't care about it one way or the other. But it's all about greed and just getting what you can get. All these tariffs, all these, you know, going to foreign countries and, you know, building your golf courses. I mean, have you ever seen a president that promotes his personal wealth as much as he does? It's ridiculous. And that's what's happened not just in the federal light, but in the local light, too. It's just get what you can get and screw the rest of the world.
Well, I think that holds true. There are those that are admit to it and are overt about it, and there are those that are covert about it. You know, when we see people
Absolutely.
Go into Congress worth X and come out of Congress worth X plus 350%, you begin to wonder, how did this happen? You know, had no
with
wealth
that
going
mind,
in.
Newell, why should
and came
the
out with a lot of wealth.
Man care about anything? Why should he care about anything except going into Walmart and stealing?
That's not the solution. You know, for one, you're not going to have a bright future there, and that's why I keep digging into the what's driving the apathy here. I mean, these numbers are mind-numbing to me. That we'll vote 180,000 people in the city out of 265,000 registered voters will vote in the presidential race, but only 75 or 77,000 in the mayor's race. You know, look, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of voting for president, but most presidents are not going to move your life to a certain degree one way or the other that is truly meaningful. You know, every time they talk about a tax rebate or whatever, you know, and you're thinking you're going to get thousands and thousands of dollars and you get $265. Keep it. Give it to a worthy cause. That's not going to impact my life one way or the other. 265, you know, but we talked about it for 18 months with one of these tax cuts. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'd rather you give it to somebody that needs it, that it's going to move their life more than it's not, certainly not going to move mine. Thank you for the call, Chuck. We'll be right back. Check in with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot. Stay with us. Folks, Saints training camp is here, and Team WWL, Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, Jeff Nowak, Steve Geller, plus Mike Dottillier and Charlie Long are your eyes and ears on the black and gold. Tune in to Sports Talk every weekday from 4 to 8 for the latest Saints news and all-pro analysis, and check in two or three times a day online on WWL Social and YouTube for post-practice breakdowns, player and coach interviews, and practice highlights. If you love Saints football, keep it locked on the flagship station of your New Orleans Saints, WWL. And just a reminder that you can always listen to our entire show. Odyssey makes it easy. You can listen to this show and our WWL Time Shifted podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And Ian Hoke is in for Scoot, and he's up next, and he's going to be visiting with Matthew in Ukraine, back to help us understand what's happening on the ground. And the Trump administration's immigration policies have piled pressure on industries across sectors. You'll find out about what impact.